"The flyby of the commoner," she told him. "Get us moving now. I'll talk with Captain Pippolidi on the way."
"Yes, ma'am," said Jet,
casting Master Satil a sardonic salute.
"We might as well run to our doom as walk."
Chapter 30
Ulla watched with mounting dread as the rendezvous point loomed. He was in the worst position imaginable, unable to act against the Republic's wishes because Satil Shan would immediately overrule him, and unable to reveal his identity to his real masters without blowing his cover. For a wild moment, he considered throwing himself on the mercy of the Mandalorians, but sanity fortunately prevailed. Stryver had no mercy. The best Ulla could have hoped for in his care was slavery. At least he was alive, he told himself, and had a chance of staying that way if he stepped through this minefield with utmost care. The Auriga Fire's blunt nose was angling ahead of the Imperial shuttle on its approach to Sabaddon's solitary satellite. The moon was blocky and misshapen, more like a brick than a sphere, with a cornucopia of craters and fathomless fissures marring its ugly face. No wonder Stryver had stayed hidden for so long. It didn't appear to have been mined or booby-trapped, which was a major omission for a colonial administration so keen to remain undisturbed. Ulla wondered if they'd simply never thought of it, or if they'd erroneously, but not unreasonably, assumed they would never be discovered so far from the galactic disk. The First Blood, Stryver's scout, anchored itself to the surface of the moon as the two ships approached. It was shaped like a crescent moon, with forward-pointing wings that bristled with weapons and a matte-black non-reflective skin. There were no markings of any kind, just two glowing circles on either side indicating ready airlocks. Jet prepared a docking ring and tube to cross the distance, and jockeyed to approach the starboard airlock. The Imperial pilot noted his intentions and moved to dock on the opposite side. Along with Lorin and Hetchke, Ulla watched the shuttle closely for any signs of treachery. The way the Imperials had illegally destroyed the Republic shuttle on Hutta was still painful to him. He expected better.
"Who's going in?"
asked Lorin over the internal comm.
"Sagar and I," said Master Satil. "And Envoy V.E."
Ulla swallowed.
"I fear I can be of little use," he started to say, but was cut off by Lorin.
"You'll need a bodyguard,"
she said.
"Just for appearances."
"All right."
"And take Clunker, too," said Jet. "I'll watch through his eyes."
"Can you and Hetchke pilot the ship on your own if you have to?"
"In a pinch," said the smuggler. "With the right incentive, I could fly a battlecruiser on my own."
"Very well, then. Maintain the umbilical seal, but close the ship once we have disembarked. Leave on my signal, whether we're aboard or not."
"Don't worry about that," the smuggler told her. "I'll dust off if you so much as twitch funny."
Ulla sought distraction in telemetry as the ship settled lightly on the low-gravity moon. Sabaddon hadn't launched any missiles since the last round. The main hotspot had been made considerably hotter by retaliatory fire, and activity was growing in other regions as well. It looked to him as though the occupants of the planet were regrouping in order to fight back, but it was hard to tell from such a distance. Every spy drone launched by the Republic fleet had been intercepted by the orbital halo of hexes and destroyed. Maybe, he told himself, he could slip a message of some kind to his opposite number in the Imperial party. That was a small and unlikely hope.